You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, delicious, dexterous dukes and duchesses of the digital den. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 136. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your verifiably vivacious va-va-voom vickers and vixens, voracious for vocabulary and vuvuzelas.
Wow.
Oh, man.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Before we start the show, I have this really interesting listener email, and two episodes ago, we talked about safety.
Yeah.
And Colin, you dropped the truth bomb on lightning traveling through.
Yes.
Phone cords?
Yes.
Phone wires?
Yep, up to your face.
I've quoted this to people, and they're like, yeah, we know.
Or, oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, this happened. I'm from a place with lightning, yeah.
And here I have an email from Daniel, and Daniel says, I just listened to the safety episode and want to share with you that circa 1992, my sister was struck by lightning during a summer thunderstorm in Columbia, South Carolina. She was in our parents' kitchen talking on a corded kitchen phone. I arrived home shortly after it happened and found her unconscious on the floor of the kitchen. The receiver on the wall phone was next to her, dangling from its cord off the wall. She wasn't unconscious for very long at all and escaped without any injury.
Oh,
but she was a little foggy and confused. 1992.
That's like an Encyclopedia Brown mystery story.
Yeah,
like a lateral thinking puzzle. It's like you find your unconscious in the kitchen floor.
Like,
the phone receiver is on the ground.
Yeah.
There's no murder weapon.
Yes or no questions only. Yeah. Was there dry ice?
Is it dry in there?
I noticed the handset was warm when I hung it back up.
That's a lateral puzzle.
It smelled like lightning.
It smelled like.
We're glad she was okay.
Not to make light of the situation.
Yes. We can laugh because she's okay.
She's safe. And he says, since then, we don't ever talk on the phone during thunderstorms in my family, which is pretty ridiculous since we all have wireless phones these days. It just became part of a habit.
Right.
You won't find any of us showering during a thunderstorm either.
Yes.
Mm.
So... yeah, I mean, like, I've never heard of this until you mentioned it, Colin, but seems like a lot of people have experience with it.
As you say, like, we don't have a lot of crazy thunder and lightning storms out here in the Bay Area compared to, you know, living out in the plains somewhere. But, yeah, I mean, as I say, like, we had that family story. We used to laugh at my great-grandma, but no, she was right.
Yeah. Pretty nuts. So thank you, Daniel, for writing in. I'm so happy that you and your sister survived.
Yes.
All right, without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hot Shot. I just want to say, Chris's baby is in front of Chris.
Like he's on one of the Ergo baby.
Yeah.
You're like a kangaroo.
Like it's a reverse baby backpack. Yes. I'm just like a kangaroo.
I feel like you have an advantage. You're cheating now on the Pop Quiz, Hot Shot.
Because there's two brains.
Yeah. There's two Chris's.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We're adding buzzers.
We'll see what happens. We're going to add some buzzers and some
All right, you guys have your morning Radio Zoo buzzers.
Out.
I have a Trivial Pursuit card. Here we go. Blue wedge for geography. What national capital is called, Krung Thep in its native language?
They set you up for that.
Colin.
Cambodia.
What national capital? The city.
Okay.
Dana?
Go ahead.
Ho Chi Minh City?
Incorrect. Not Vietnam.
I don't think it's Bangkok. Bangkok?
It's Bangkok.
Oh, it is Bangkok. I thought it was Bangkok. I didn't say that.
Wait a minute. But that sounds like Thai as well.
It does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
All right, pink wedge for our pop culture. What kind of legal agreement inspires the plot of the Coen Brothers movie Intolerable Cruelty? Colin?
I think that's a prenuptial agreement, right?
Yes, it is. Prenup.
Yeah. Yep.
Starring Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Nice accent. Nice Welsh accent there.
Oh, yeah, she is Welsh.
I think she is.
All right. Yellow wedge, who wrote Industrial Society and Its Future, published under duress by the New York Times and Washington Post on September 19th, 1995?
Published under duress under in duress. 1995, Industrial Society and its Future.
1995. Colin again.
That's the Unabomber, right?
Ted Kaczynski. Oh. Yes, it is. Ted Kaczynski. The work is more popularly known as the Unabomber Manifesto. Industrial Society and Its Future.
Mm.
All right, Purple Wedge. Tom Wolfe originally wrote The Bonfire of the Vanities for what magazine?
Harper's.
Incorrect.
Oh, what is it? Is it...
Was it Esquire?
Incorrect.
The Atlantic.
Incorrect. Chris again.
Rolling Stone.
It was published in 27 installments.
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of a throwback.
I remember the movie and I fell asleep as a kid.
Yeah.
I think most people agree it was not a very good movie.
Oh, okay. I was like, what is this boring?
Sorry if you were involved in making of that movie.
No.
Alrighty then. Green, white for science. What software product was originally called Display, then Image Pro? Chris.
Adobe Photoshop?
Photoshop.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
All right, last question, Orange Wedge. What video game is recognized as a sport in Norway under the name Machine Dancing?
Yeah.
Chris. Gotta be Dance Dance Revolution.
Correct. Yeah. Dance Dance Revolution. Okay. That was so... It's still big.
Recognized as a sport in Norway.
Yes.
It is athletic. It's super athletic. Athleticism. Yep.
Good job, brains. Oh, sorry. Quick announcement. I don't know if you guys know, but I know because I receive text messages. Our former Pub Trivia teammate, Rob... from New York, our Loketrotter number one.
Yes.
Is going to become a pub quiz master.
Yeah. Go,
congrats,
Rob.
Rob, in New York City. We don't know where yet, but he went to the...
It takes years of training. Right?
So the pub quiz that they're running in New York is the same company as the company that runs our pub quiz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in fact, I ran into Liam, who runs the organization that runs our quiz night, and he's like, yeah, so do you know Rob? I'm like, yeah, I know Rob. I gave him a good recommendation.
Oh!
Yes.
And that's how he got the job.
I'll expect my kickback in the mail, right. Rob.
No, he actually had to go through tryouts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, he had to audition, and he actually did have to deliver, like, read round three, and I was like, that's so cool.
He would be good at it. He's really funny.
Yeah. He's very dry. So if you're in the New York area...
You have to be able to look at the words and then... say the right words after you look at the words.
It's harder than it sounds.
Right. Oh, I know.
We've had a lot of people
have trouble with that.
I can't even pronounce some of the stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't read those questions.
Oh, baby noises. I know. It's so cute. It's okay.
I know.
Oh, it's so cute.
Uh-oh.
Is he going to puke on you?
No.
Oh!
He might decide that he needs to start eating or something.
He's like, I want to be a quiz
master. He's looking for a boob.
He's looking for a boob.
He's like, where is it?
Let's all pray he doesn't find one.
It's going to be a little awkward.
Whom? Yeah.
What's a butt for?
For everybody. For him, he's like, this is
we all lose.
Uh-oh. Well, we're going to take a quick baby break, and we'll be right back with your regularly scheduled podcast. Oh, friend, it's okay.
Oh, so cute.
Okay, honey bug.
So today's episode, this week, we're going to talk about, since we're on a podcast.
Are you recording this?
Yes, it's very meta. We decided to do a topic on voice. And
speeches.
Speech.
Mm-hmm. And the power of voice.
The power of voice.
I have a cute little thing for you guys, but just to
not your baby.
Loosen us up. Yeah, okay. Well, I got
in addition to the baby.
You want to take them. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give each of you a little slip of paper that's going to have three English language words written on it.
Okay.
And I just want you to read them out loud. Just read them out loud, putting separation in between them at first, and then read them all out loud.
Okay.
Together.
All together. Okay. And I'll let you know who I want to go first.
All right.
Sure.
This is scary.
Yeah, it's okay.
I think
we're going to say some bad words.
You might know where this is. Yeah, I'm not tricking you into saying swear words. Don't okay. worry. Yes,
there are no, I was having there flashbacks no, from sixth
right,
grade.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Okay, cool. Here, Colin.
Oh, there is. Mm-hmm.
Don't look at it. Don't look at it until you're okay. Okay. Dana and Karen. So I want right. Dana, Colin, Karen.
Okay.
So again, read it, put some spaces in between, and then just read it all the way through. And then you do the same thing.
Okay. Rise up lights. Rise up lights.
My bull fine. My bull fine.
Good I might. Good I might. Oh!
So you want to read them all fast again?
Rise up lights.
My bull fine.
Good I might.
You're all speaking Australian! Yeah.
Wait, what are...
Rise up lights.
What's...
You just said razor blades.
Rise.
The way that some of our Australian listeners might have said.
Rise up lights. Oh, rise up lights.
My bull fine. My bull fine.
My bull fine. Maybe fine.
Mobile phone.
Mobile phone.
Oh, my bull fine.
My bull fine.
And of course, Karen has said.
Good I might.
Yes.
Good. That's very cute.
Yeah. These phrases have been kind of, you know, going around Reddit and the internet for a while. There was just a video where they captured some people's reactions to saying these that's getting passed around a little bit. That's
rise
pretty
of
cute,
blades.
Right?
My
rise
bull
of
fine.
Rise yeah. of blades.
And it's interesting. It's like, it's kind of reminding us like, oh, we make all of the sounds that, you know, people who speak with a different accent make. We just put them in different order and, you know, we use them for different words. But yeah.
I had a friend and she was telling a story how she went to visit Australia and she was at a pho, you know, a noodle shop, you know, P-H-O, you know, the Vietnamese style noodle shop. And she's, the menu was written in case you didn't know what this food was.
Sure.
So, you know, they're like, pho, and then in parentheses it says, pronounced like fur, F-U-R.
Oh, yeah,
and in
course.
Her mind she's thinking like, fur? She's like, no, it's not. Yeah. But like, oh,
pho.
For an Australian speaker, it's actually pretty close.
Yeah, it's closer.
Pho. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, that was good. That was good. I feel like at least 1/10 Australian now.
All right. Well, we got Tim Tams here too.
That's true. Yes.
Oh, 20%. So 20%.
That's why. Yeah.
I've got a quiz for you guys. A general grab bag. You know I like these grab bag quizzes of voice facts, vocal facts, speech facts. So please get your buzzers ready.
All right.
As you guys likely know, vocal singing, completely unaccompanied by music, is called...
Acapella.
Acapella singing. Correct! But do any of you know what acapella means? Chris.
In the chapel.
In the manner
what?
In the manner of the chapel.
Right,
that's right.
Right.
That's right. Chapel style singing,
right,
basically.
Yeah.
Like cappella is chapel.
Cappella
like,
is chapel
like
in,
style.
In Italian.
When the choir sings in the chapel, they sing without.
Yeah,
without
that's right.
Awesome.
Like yeah, like a lot of musical terms. Awesome. Yes, Italian. Yeah. Like a lot of musical terms.
Yes,
right, and of course an allusion to its origins as church singing, religious singing. You know, just it feels more important without all those fancy instruments there. We'll stick with singing here. What? And you guys can work together on this one. What are the four traditional voice types for male singers?
Tenor.
Okay.
Go ahead. You guys can go one at a time if you
baritone,
want.
Baritone.
Yeah.
Bass.
Yep, you got three of them.
And, alto.
No. Right?
No.
That's
tenor,
a woman.
Tenor, baritone, bass. I believe countertenor.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
From lowest to
higher
highest.
Higher than tenor,
from
right?
lowest to highest, yeah. bass.
Bass.
Baritone.
BB.
Tenor. Countertenor. Yes.
Yeah. When you're talking about boys, like boys choir, then they'll have like alto or soprano.
Higher.
Right.
What they're
right.
Yeah.
Right. There are a few enough, you know, what they call male sopranos that they call them male sopranos. It's, The Guinness World Record for greatest number of characters voiced in an audiobook.
Okay.
We may have discussed this on the show before. I'll give it to you guys. It's Roy Dotrice for his reading of A Game of Thrones by George R.R. Martin. Whoever guesses closest will be correct. How
many
characters? I know you guys have all read these, seen the show.
Yep.
So think about it. Really think about it.
Yeah.
How many characters were voiced in A Game of Thrones?
126.
Chris says 126.
That's a lot. 80.
Yeah.
Karen says 80.
I'll say 50.
200.
Oh, my god!
224.
Every so stable 224
servants.
Yes. Right, yeah.
Roy Dotrice. My hat's off to you.
Yeah.
Did all of those people talk?
224 people did. Yes.
Wow.
Point of view character might be in some other room talking to five other people.
Absolutely.
You know, that's true.
And they interact with a great number of, you know,
right.
Just think about everybody at, you know, up at Castle Black and the Night's Watch. The and yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because sure. It's not a narration, because each chapter is a different character, yep. So he has to get into that character.
Well, and all the characters they interact with, more importantly.
I wonder how many of them are the same voice, though.
Like
guy number six, you know.
Jim Henson and Frank Oz worked together for many years, of course. They famously voiced what two duos?
Oh.
Karen.
Kermit and Piggy.
Yes, Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy. What other famous duo did Jim Henson and Frank Oz voice?
Dr. Bunsen Burner and his assistant Beaker?
No.
Oh, that's good. That's a good duo.
Bert and Ernie. Bert and Ernie. Since the first Academy Awards ceremony in 1929, this will be another closest to answer. How many silent films?
Oh, wow.
Which is to say, very specifically, films with no voice or speech in them have won Best Picture.
Ooh.
Since 1929?
First awards were given out in 1929.
I say 10.
Yeah.
3.
6.
Just one.
Wow.
Jassinger? Talkies was right around the same time.
It was, that's right. So, as we know, the Jazz Singer was sort of the first full-length sound talkie. And that was right around the same time they started giving out the Academy Awards. It was not the Jazz Singer, it was Wings, the very first movie to win Best Picture. Was silent.
That,
everything since then.
God, and that is such a good trivia thing. We gotta remember that.
So now,
first one.
So here's the thing to watch out for at Pub Quiz. You know, some people might say, hey, but what about The Artist? The Artist won in not 100% silent.
Yep.
There are.
They talked at the end.
Yes, yes. And also there's some voices in his dream sequence. Yes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they very pointedly kind of, it has a lot of weight because it's silent for the rest of the movie.
Yep.
We'll stick with movies here, and TV as well. In the world of movies and TV, what is an under five? If you call a person, that person's an under five. What is an under five? Oh. Dana.
They say under five words.
You're close. An under five is an actor who has no more than five lines of dialogue.
Okay.
Because this is where the pay scale, this is the breakup pay scale. If you have more than five lines of dialogue and it's limited to 50 words, then you start getting paid more. The ability to throw one's voice is an old entertainment tradition, of course, also known as ventriloquism. What does ventriloquism literally mean in Latin? Ventriloquism. You can probably figure out at least half of it.
Yeah, loquacious is like talkative.
Distance,
that's
talking,
the talking part.
Ventriloquism. Chamber?
No, I like the way you guys are trying to break this down.
Chamber?
Means belly talking.
Belly?
Venter. Venter is your stomach, your belly. Yeah. So stomach speaking, stomach talking. As if you're projecting it from a different part of your body. All right, last one here. And I'm sure this will be an easy one for you guys, because I'm sure you have all been taking our advice we give to listeners, studying the order of U.S. presidents. I'll even give you what president this is. So this will just be a softball for you guys. But,
thanks for setting us up, Colin.
Play along and pretend.
Okay.
He was the 19th president of the United States and was the first president to have a telephone in the White House.
Oh, man.
1879.
Okay.
Any guesses? Any guesses?
Grant?
Madison.
You're close. You're close. It was Rutherford B. Hayes.
Hayes. You say hey on a telephone.
Oh, I like that.
Hey.
President Hayes.
Hey.
President Hay.
There are some great anecdotes about him and the first phone in the White House. So first I learned that he has been unfairly maligned by no fewer than two presidents. Both Barack Obama and Ronald Reagan have told this anecdote of, you know, that when Rutherford B. Hayes first saw the telephone, he said, oh, that's a great invention, but who would ever want to use one? And this is actually not true. He was a big technology proponent. He was fascinated by the telephone.
Probably why he wanted one in the White House, right?
Yeah.
All right. Good job, guys.
The human speech in general is just fascinating, isn't it? The idea that we're able, using this weird combination of, like, our lungs and throat and teeth and tongue and stuff to flapping form. Me. Yeah.
It like, is. It's like you think it's like a machine, but really it's just like squishy stuff.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
But to form these unique sounds that we then interpret as having meaning and all the different weird kind of stuff we can do. So over the years, inventors and crazy people have attempted to build machines, you know, that can replicate. Lots of connections. Build machines that can reproduce the sound of human speech. And so when you, I mean, now we have Siri, right? Which is pretty dang good when you listen to Siri. Sounds pretty great. When you start looking into the history of speech synthesis, two machines keep coming up. One is considered to be the first historically verifiable mechanical speech synthesizer, and then the first electronic one, right?
Mechanical.
Oh, yeah. So the search for the earliest machine that attempts to mimic human speech brings us to Wolfgang von Kempelen.
Okay. It already sounds old.
Does anybody remember Wolfgang von Kempelen? We spoke about one of his a
phonograph,
not the phonograph,
that wax reel,
not the wax reel. No, we talked about him on our hoax episode. Wolfgang von Kempelen was the creator of the Mechanical Turk, which was the machine created in 1770 that purported to be a robot that played chess. But was actually
it was a dude in it. It was a host.
There was a guy inside controlling it. Now, this was still a very intricate and cool piece of machinery, right? I mean,
no doubt.
You try building a box that a guy sits in and it controls a man that moves chess pieces around a board, and that guy's got to be able to tell where the chess pieces are.
Somebody just said challenge accepted, right. Chris.
Yeah. So I mean, he was a scam artist.
Sure.
But he was a smart scam artist, and so the vocal apparatus, the speech synthesizing machine, this was real. This works. Linguists understood vowels and consonants and like how sounds were made. Basically, let me ask you this: what is a vowel? What is the definition of a vowel?
A vowel, it's anything that's unencumbered air through your passageways.
Very nice.
Wow.
Yeah, very
what?
Good. A vowel is this any sound you make without cutting off any part of the vocal track.
A-E-I-O-U.
I didn't stop anything. Any consonant, like C, I have to stop it. T, P. And of course, they have all of the, labiodental, when you put your teeth to your lips, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
Fricatives.
Yeah. And it's all classified by
if you use your lips and you clip that close.
Or like a glottal stop, like when I say, like someone whose name is Martin, and I just say Martin. Mr. Martin, just like close open my throat, right? Yeah. So anyway, vowels, you don't stop. And so basically, people kind of started to realize, and certainly von Kempelen thought like, oh, okay, so what I need is just an air passageway and then a variety of different ways to stop the air that would simulate the consonants, and I could have a machine that you could control that would make words.
Yeah, seems logical.
So basically, the machine that he created looks like a shoebox with a bellows attached to it, like the thing you'd use to blow air onto a fireplace. Yeah. So just imagine that. And you put both your hands into this thing to manipulate the bellows with your, forearm, while you're working all these different, holes and levers and stuff. So,
it's like an accordion.
Yep. So you're pressing the bellows and you're holding your hand over a rubber opening that, is a mouth. And so, depending on how open that is, it'll sound like A or O.
Okay.
So there's your vowel sound. There's a reed that vibrates, and that produces the sound of the mouth.
Sounds sort of bagpipe-like, maybe, in some ways.
Nostril holes that you had to cover unless you wanted a nasal sound.
Oh, wow. Levers, like a fake face.
Yeah. There's levers that let air escape in such a way that it makes sounds. And so if you just let it go, you get s, and if you voice it, you get z. That's the difference between S and Z. Is there a voice? Right.
What?
Yeah.
That
The original machine is in the Deutsch Museum in Munich. It's still there.
Cool.
You can still mess around with it if you, you know,
can
if
you?
You're, if
you
you're,
can?
Well, no, you can. You and I can. Like experts in the field of antique musical instruments can get permission to do it. There is a replica that somebody plays on YouTube that's also in German.
Whoa!
So I can play this for you.
Yes.
Whoa!
Yes. Please do.
Mama. Wow.
Whoa, that's creepy.
That
it's like
is
the teacher from Snoopy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Like so that was the origin. That was the origin. And other people would sort of jump on that, and there were more machines. There was one, there's a really freaky one. There's photographs of it. Bigger, it's more elaborate, but yeah, it lets you sort of play all these parts of the machine to try to produce speech. But the guy put a wooden woman's head on the front of it. So it's this big, it looks like a big sort of elaborate, you know, like a set of monkey bars or something, and then a woman's face on the front. And then you can make the mouth go up and down while you're saying stuff. It's like Siri's great 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 grandmother and also horrifically freaky.
Yeah.
So now let's jump ahead to the 1930s, the late 1930s, when Bell Labs, an inventor named Homer Dudley at Bell Labs, he debuted the Voder at the 1939
World's Fair.
Very good. Yeah, 1939 World's Fair in New York. Bell Labs and Homer Dudley debuted the Voder for voice operating demonstrator. It's helpful to think of it as like the second half of a text to speech, you know, computer. It didn't take text and turn it into speech, you know, but because it had to be operated by a human. It was actually very similar to what the Von Kempelen machine. It was just electronic instead of mechanical.
Okay.
So somebody had to put in commands to get the machine to make these sounds. It's
like
sounds
a simple
language.
Keyboard.
Yep. So the keyboard had 10 keys, and then there was a foot pedal, and the foot pedal would control intonation.
Air. Oh.
And the 10 keys would control things like consonant sounds, hissing, vowel sounds, popping, you know, nasal sounds, and just you combined it all together. So here's some audio from a demonstration of the Voder at the World's Fair.
Okay. Well, we've heard the Voder make a word, and by combining words, of course, we get a sentence. For example, Helen, will you have the voter say, she saw me?
She saw me.
That sounded awfully flat. How about a little expression? Say the sentence in answer to these questions. Who saw you?
She saw me.
Whom did she see?
She saw me.
Well, did she see you or hear you?
She saw me.
Oh, actually, that's cool. The different
the
30s? Intonation.
Yeah, yep. That's pretty good.
Now, something you might have noticed, you might have picked up during that sound clip, the interesting thing about the Voder, the operators were all
women.
Because he said, oh, Helen, could you make the Voder say this? So what I assume here is that, you know, at this point, you know, typing, right? Typing letters and doing stenography and stuff like that was primarily a female profession at this point. And so that is who they kind of called upon, you know, to operate the Voder because they were bringing in, because the keyboard was like using a stenography machine, basically. Mm. And so they were calling on, you know, the absolute most talented, like, typists in the country to come and do this. And it actually, so Helen there, she had to train for a year.
Wow.
To be able to use the machine that way.
Oh, I mean, it's got to be like learning an instrument. Like you say, it's like,
Yep. Because you just have to break the word down into all of its component parts and, like, you know, hit the, you know, the right thing for the right consonant sound and then kind of like, you know, let go of that and go into the vowel and then do the end of the word. Now, here's something that I noticed about, you know, listening to the audio. There's even some like film clips of this demo too, but listening to the way that they kind of constructed this whole demo, there was something interesting that I noticed about the technology. I'm going to play you a clip of Voder speaking again, and I just want you to tell me, what is Voder saying in this clip?
Okay.
I'll play it again.
I get your point.
Okay.
Your point is
what is my point?
The previous demos, the person says what the voter's about to say to give everybody context and prime you, so you're expecting it.
Absolutely.
But when you just play it out of context, it's hard to get it.
I couldn't make it out.
Yeah.
He's saying, good afternoon, radio audience.
Mm.
Okay, so Helen, why don't you have Voda say good afternoon, radio audience?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, now you can hear it.
Wonderful voter. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, also notice how I mean, they actually did. They really did emphasize, like, how difficult it was. Like, they auditioned hundreds of women, and they got down to, like, just a tiny handful of people who were talented enough to do this. But, like, man, Helen, her contributions to history here were pretty serious.
Seriously.
Yeah. Like, you gotta be talented to make it do all those things.
Good job, girl.
Yep. Wow. And of course, we had these same issues with the first recorded sounds also. Like, I played you guys that Twinkle Twinkle little Star. And he was like, What is this? what is she saying?
All right, let's take a quick break, a word from our sponsor.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job Brain. And this week we're talking about voice and speech.
Okay, so when I found out today's show was about speeches and voice, I was immediately like, we should bone up on our speeches. They come up in trivia all the time. Oh, like,
it's true.
So,
it's true.
And we're not very good.
I know. So I went to time.com and I was like, what are the most, or what are the 10 most famous speeches? Mm. Like,
the ones we really,
like we have to know.
Not word for word, but know that they can name them.
Yeah. I'll tell you the most famous line from that speech, and you tell me who said it and the name of their speech.
All right.
Okay. All right. Yeah, sure.
All right. Buzzers up. These are the top 10. We can't do that bad, right? Top 10?
The title of this speech is hard.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm. My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Everyone.
John F. Kennedy. Man, I don't know the name of that speech. Yeah, but that's definitely JFK.
Uh-huh.
This is
from his inaugural address.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes, 1961. All right. Got the person right. That's good. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Everyone.
Abraham Lincoln.
The Gettysburg Address.
Yes. Do you know what year?
It's four score and seven years after 1776.
87.
18.
I like your math approach. That's a good,
87 plus 76.
Right. I don't know.
1863.
There we go.
That would have answered it.
Pen and paper.
Nice.
All right.
Wait, how much? Score is 20, right?
Yeah. Score is 20. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Patrick Henry?
Yes.
Yes.
Who was that?
He was one of the
kind of a founding father.
Revolutionary. Okay. Revolutionary.
Yeah. Right? He was hanged, right?
1775, this was his give me liberty or give me death speech.
Oh, that's what it's called?
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
There we go. Some of these are kind of named after their famous lines. Yeah. Yes. Yep. Okay.
Trick question.
Patrick Henry. All right.
All right. They're going to get a little trickier. These are still pretty famous speeches, but they might not be speeches you've thought about since high school.
Okay. So,
whether we turn to the declarations of the past or to the professions of the present, the conduct of the nation seems equally hideous and revolting. America is false to the past, false to the present, and solemnly binds herself to be false to the future.
Mm,
wow. Somebody upset.
Really upset. Yeah. Is that MLK?
You're kind Malcolm of on X. The right.
Malcolm X.
So you're like 100 years too soon.
Frederick Douglass?
Yes.
Oh.
It's called The Hypocrisy of American Slavery. That one I came up on a lot of speech lists. I looked around and I was like, oh, okay. All right. It was we the people, not we the white male citizens, nor yet we the male citizens, but we the whole people who formed the Union. And we formed it not to give the blessings of liberty, but to secure them, not to the half of ourselves and to the half of our posterity, but to the whole people, women as well as men.
Can go both 50. Ways. Yeah, I'll say Susan B. Anthony.
I was going to say Susan
It's Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. The Suffragette Manifesto.
You're so, no. Women's rights to the suffrage. Oh, okay. Suffrage is the word. Yeah.
Nice.
You ask, what is our policy? I can say it's to wage war by sea, by land, by air, with all our might and with all our strength that God can give us, to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalog of human crime. This is our policy.
Is this FDR, like, getting us into World War II?
Sounds like the right era.
It's like, right era.
Yeah. Winston Wilson. Churchill?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. Getting Britain into World War II.
Yes. Or the name of this one? This is the Blood, Toil, Tears, and Sweat speech.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
They're so dramatic.
Yeah.
They are. Mm-hmm. All right. Just a couple more. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make the real promises of democracy.
That's got to be the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yes. Do you know which speech?
Was that the Washington Monument speech?
It was, but that speech has a very specific name.
Does it? I mean, what? That was I had a dream.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
For some reason, they never make you say that one in elementary school. You don't get to that part of the speech.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. All right. There is no moral issue. It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country. There is no issue of states' rights or national rights. There is only the struggle for human rights. I have not the slightest doubt what will be your answer.
So getting people to vote?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the slightest doubt what will be your answer.
This could happen at any time, right?
Yeah, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this like around like Civil Rights Act?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? So?
Oh, yeah. Johnson?
Lyndon B. Johnson.
Yeah.
The American Promise, 1965.
Yeah. He had dogs.
All right. Last one. Yeah, he did.
Yes,
have dogs.
Eagles. He did.
Yeah.
And he would lift them by the ears.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That's Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ronnie Riggs.
And what was
Ronald McDonald.
What was the name of the speech? Was it just...
This one would come up, I think.
Yeah.
This one is Remarks at the Brandenburg Gate.
Ah.
Brandenburg.
Yes, because he was there.
He was there.
At the wall.
He was this wall.
Yes.
Yeah, this one right behind him.
Yeah. This wall. Yeah, 1987. Good job, you guys.
Yeah.
I'm motivated.
Okay, guys, so I apologize for a potential squeakiness that you might hear in the background. So when we talk about voice and speech, I think I just watched this on the Jimmy Fallon show, on the Tonight Show. He and Morgan Freeman, he challenged Morgan Freeman to inhale a little bit of helium and narrate things with Morgan Freeman's very stately voice in helium. And
okay.
He was not very amused. And then it occurred to me that I've never, ever done the helium
really?
Squeaky voice thing.
I thought that was just a rite of childhood.
Yeah. No, yeah. I've never done it. It also perplexes me. Like, why does your voice become squeaky after helium? So I actually have helium balloons here. I'm going to try it for the first time. What should I say? What should I say?
Something really dramatic. It's, it's more fun if...
You should do a Good Job Brain podcast introduction, you know?
Yeah,
read the alliteration. Yeah.
That's yeah.
It. Yeah.
For the first time ever.
Yes.
Karen's voice on helium.
As I will.
No, Karen, you have to take
a pretty good breath.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
you
have to like take a breath. We'll show you what it's like and then you can do it.
Hello and welcome to Good Job Brain. I'm Chris and I'm here with Colin, Dana, and Karen talking crazy facts about the human voice.
Wow.
And what happens to it when you have helium? And now you can see it going back to normal, basically, and we're pretty much back. Yeah, it's still a little high.
Karen's first helium.
So now, four reels.
More. A little more. All right.
Hello. Oh, my God. I sound like a Oompa Loompa. Or not Oompa Loompa. The things from Wally Land. We are the... Wow!
And then it's coming in.
Munchkin, yeah. We are the na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
And then now it's... No, it's still a little bit high. Still a little bit high. Whoa! That's weird.
Right?
That is super weird.
Yeah, okay. Well, now everybody has to do it.
It's a little higher now.
You sound so cute! As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death.
Some Coolio.
Right, right.
Mr. Gor... Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
You actually sound like a robot.
Tiny Ronald Reagan.
So why does helium make your... You're scared. Is your voice still high?
No. I think it's back to normal. I'm stuck. What if it sticks this way?
Why does helium make your voice sound funny? Why? Do you guys...
I don't know. It does something to your vocal
magic.
Cords.
Something with your vocal cords.
Actually, so here's the thing. Contrary to popular belief, helium does not do anything to your vocal cords. And it does not change, even though it sounds high, technically it is not changing the pitch.
So how about this? What we know about vocal cords, right? So air, it's carbon dioxide passing through our vocal tract, through our lungs.
Right.
Helium is lighter than air. It's lighter than carbon dioxide, so it must
sound moves differently
through in a different way. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's so weird to think that what voices sound like to us is entirely dependent on the air quality, the pressure, the temperature of the world.
Yep.
It doesn't change that much wherever you are in the world because, you know, our air, our atmosphere is probably comprised of the same kind of proportions. Maybe it'll change with temperature,
Elevation. Not huge variations.
Not hugely. All your squishy bits are still making the same exact movement.
Right.
It's how that frequency travels through the air. It excites the air molecules more, and helium is one of the lightest, making the frequency higher, making you sound higher.
Awesome.
Absolutely, when I was a kid, there were grown-ups who, in the explanation they gave me, was, as you say, it was a common, it tightens up your vocal cords. So it's like, okay, it sounds plausible, but
we can't make any sound without air, and the air is the vital component of it.
Of course, this goes the other way. If... obviously I don't have a heavy ear, but if you do breathe in heavy air, which please don't, it will sound lower.
Right.
Because your frequency is lower. Mm-hmm. And so it'll sound more bassy and less pitchy, even though your larynx and your vocal cords are doing the same exact movement.
Yeah.
So that blows my mind that it's not our voice, it's how we perceive voice. It's very kind of counterintuitive.
It's always startling to be reminded how much of our perception depends, on the physics of the world around us.
Sure.
However, I have to say, I guess I should have made this disclaimer in the beginning of my segment. Breathing helium, even though it was fun and you heard our funny voices, could be very, very, very dangerous. And this is because when you breathe in helium, you're basically not breathing
You're not breathing oxygen.
And you might deprive your body of oxygen. So if you take a really big hit, please don't. It could be very dangerous. Actually, just this year, there are several deaths involving with helium, at parties for people breathing in helium.
Right. But it's like, you don't want to see...
Were they huffing it?
No, it's to make funny sounds.
No, yeah. But
taking a helium balloon and inhaling a little bit of it and making funny sounds for a few seconds, fine. But, don't go getting a helium tank and sucking in tons of helium.
Or even just or even just breathing a lot of the helium. All four of us shared one balloon, basically. And it was little sips. And you could hear that our voices went back to normal very, very quickly.
Yeah.
With little kids wanting to sound funny, they would inhale a whole balloon or
Hold
it in. And within seconds, you're depriving yourself. Yeah, you pass out.
Right.
So here's the thing. Most of the deaths weren't necessarily asphyxiation. It was because they would pass out and they would fall and hit their head on something.
Okay. Yeah.
So it is, I just want to say, it is dangerous. If you do want to sound funny, if you're a kid, you're listening to this, you want to sound funny, you know, have an adult there.
Parental supervision. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Ask your parents.
That was pretty fun. Like, I'm not going to lie. That was that was pretty fun, and that was pretty weird.
So did you, I'm curious, did you just never have the opportunity, or you were always scared to try it?
I don't think I even knew it was a thing until I came to America. And also, it's like, where
we're
do
so
I
wacky
go?
In America.
Like, where do I go where there's helium balloons all the time? Right. Not, I mean, not a lot of places, especially well, once, you know, you're an,
once
adult.
An adult. Once you're an adult. Yeah, exactly.
I know a helium guy.
Yep.
So please, be careful.
I feel like
be helium smart. Be helium smart.
Be helium smart.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course, you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
Colin, you want to
bring it home?
And bring it home.
Yes, I will close this out here. So earlier in the quiz, you know, I had asked the question about Roy Dotrice voicing the Game of Thrones characters.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about one of those characters in particular, character who has quite a few lines, good number of lines, but only one word.
Oh, Hodor.
Are we talking about Hodor?
Yes, we are talking about Hodor. In case you have never read or watched Game of Thrones, Hodor is the, they describe him as the simple-minded stable boy.
Right.
He speaks one word. Like, all of his communication is Hodor. Mm-hmm. Hodor, Hodor, Hodor. And he can modulate it, and he can give a different intonation, but
There's some point in the books where they're just like, wait, his name isn't Hodor? He's like, no, his name is Walder.
that's right.
Because all he could say was Hodor. We just started calling him Hodor. It's like,
right.
Oh, okay. He's a Pokemon.
Hodor's condition is real. This is not something made up just for the show. George R. R. Martin did not come up with this. And it's not even as rare as you might think. Hodor, if you were to diagnose him today, would be diagnosed with an extreme, extreme case of expressive aphasia. And you may have heard of aphasia before. Aphasia, just generally as a family of disorders, is any kind of neurological impairment that interferes with your speech or your language. There are sort of two broad types of aphasia. You can have expressive aphasia, which means you can't express yourself fluently. You can comprehend oftentimes just fine, but he can only answer Hodor. He has low expression ability. The other type of aphasia would be receptive aphasia, meaning you can generate words perfectly fluently, but they may not make sense.
Oh.
You may not even be aware that what you're saying doesn't make sense.
Whoa.
Yeah, and you know, you can imagine that each kind of aphasia would be sort of frustrating in its own way. They say that about 20% of people with chronic aphasia, some type of aphasia, have what's called speech automatism. So speech automatism is basically a condition where you only have access to one, sometimes, or a limited set of stock phrases or words.
I am Groot!
I am Groot would be an example of, exactly, speech automatism or stereotypes type speech. I want to play for you guys an example of a real life person who has essentially the same type of aphasia that Hodor has.
All right.
This is a man being interviewed, and his Hodor word is tono, tono. And this is an example of how, if you have to deal with this kind of aphasia, you learn to really express everything you can with this one word.
Oh.
So let me play this short little interview. This is a clinical interview.
And he understands everything.
Right. So again, to be clear, his comprehension is virtually undamaged, virtually fine. It's the expressive part that is failing.
However, we shall see how effective this patient is at manipulating his intonation of this utterance.
Now tell me, why is it that you're moving, actually?
Amazing.
It sounds like real.
It is. It follows the prosody and the patterns of, I mean, what we would say, you know, sentences, otherwise normal speech. Right. And that's how he's expressing himself. And he knows that he's saying the same words. Not like he doesn't understand.
Right.
But the way, you know, his neurological condition is such that that's all he can express. Aphasia usually, you know, you'll see it a lot post-stroke. Or a traumatic brain injury. So it's definitely tends to arise in places where you've had some sort of injury.
Damage.
Yeah, to the brain. Yes. So, Chris, as I think you mentioned briefly, some of the most famous examples in fiction and the world around us of severe expressive aphasia are Hodor and virtually every Pokemon.
Yes. Every Pokemon except for Mew.
Pikachu.
Yeah.
Pikachu.
Yeah.
Pikachu.
Yeah, Pikachu. Yeah,
Pikachu. Pikachu. Yeah.
And every single Pokemon. Except for Meowth on Team Rocket.
Yes. So although he's not typical of aphasics, Hodor is absolutely believable and absolutely realistic.
That is cool.
Yeah. It is amazing when you think of everything that has to go right for us to be able to produce and process speech.
Yeah. Right. Now, when Bran's brain goes into his wolf's body, that's real too, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, fast. Yeah.
100%.
Oh. Yay!
Start training. Start picking a wolf.
We'll talk more about it on our Worg episode.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. On a Worg episode.
Yeah.
All right, and that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about speech, about helium, about vocoders and voters, and also Hodor.
Hodors and voters.
Wow, that's really hard to say. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. Thanks to our sponsor, lynda.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
Hodor.
Hodor.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.